Welcome to the Unheard Daily Podcast. The article you're about to listen to is narrated by the team over at NOAA and is taken from today's Unheard edition. You can read other great articles as well as listen to and watch more Unheard content over at unheard.com or via the Unheard app.
For NOAA, this is Martin Buchanan reading from Unheard, where on the 23rd of September 2022, David Patrikarakos writes, "Will Putin's gamble pay off? Let that motherfucker send as many slaves as he wants. It won't make any difference. We will send them back to Russia in boxes, like we did to the ones he sent already." Ivan pauses. He is involved in civilian resistance activities in southern Ukraine, and he has pointed views on the occupiers, born from first-hand experience. "Well, actually, the Russians generally just leave their dead behind in the field, so they don't go back to Russia, in fact. We fertilize our soil with them." On the morning of the 21st of September 2022, President Vladimir Putin went on Russian state TV to face his nation, and by proxy, the world. He told his people that there would be a mass mobilization for the war in Ukraine, supposedly only calling up military reservists, primarily those who served in the armed forces and have specific military occupational specialities and corresponding experience. It would be Russia's first mobilization since World War II, which he announced on the International Day of Peace. For all his flaws, Putin does have a sense of humor. The speech comprised Putin's usual mix of mendacity, self-pity, and delusion, a toxic combination in autocrats that invariably leads to violence. Just ask the people of Iran. Putin began by talking about the need to protect the sovereignty, security, and territorial integrity of Russia. By this, he meant the areas inside Ukraine it stole and now occupies, and Ukrainian strikes against targets inside Russian-held territory by way of response. It comes in the wake of the recent Kyiv counteroffensive that has driven Russian troops out of much of the northeastern parts of Ukraine. Of course, Russia could never have lost to Ukrainians. It was, as Putin explained, the West who were behind Russia's recent defeats. Not that he calls them defeats, of course, because it wants to destroy our country. For that reason, the West is trying to turn Ukraine's people into cannon fodder. According to Putin, and it's important to understand this, the West unleashed this aggression back in 2014. In reality, this was when Russian soldiers marched into Crimea without provocation, stole it, and then invaded eastern Ukraine following the Ukrainian Euromaidan Revolution of 2013, which overthrew Kremlin stooge Viktor Yanukovych. Putin could not allow a democratic revolution next door to pass off without issue. Who knew what thoughts it might put into the heads of his own oppressed citizens? Putin refers to Ukraine's post-Maidan settlement as the government created in Ukraine as the result of a state coup. Putin is a stickler for democracy, it seems. Between the 23rd and 27th of September, there will be referendums in the occupied territories of Ukraine over formal annexation to Russia. Pretty much the entire world, including the now diplomatic Turks, has inevitably and correctly denounced them as a sham. Putin now posits his unprovoked and militarily foolish invasion of Ukraine as an existential conflict for Russians. The goal of that part of the West is to weaken, divide, and ultimately destroy our country. They are saying openly now that in 1991 they managed to split up the Soviet Union, and now is the time to do the same to Russia, which must be divided into numerous regions that would be at deadly feud with each other. With its paranoia at Western intentions, nostalgia for a supposedly halcyon USSR, and belief that Russia must fight, ergo conquer more land, to survive, this statement pretty much sums up the entirety of Putinist foreign policy over the last 15 years or so. International reaction has been as expected. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky was typically eloquent. Putin wants to drown Ukraine in blood, including the blood of his own men. UK Defence Secretary Ben Wallace saw it as an admission that his invasion is failing and that Russia is fast becoming a global pariah. Recent events have undoubtedly been a colossal setback for Russia. It's now been 7 months of fighting, and Putin has failed to meet the 15th of September deadline he set his army to take the Donetsk region. In that time, it has suffered. Russian Defence Minister Sergei Shoigu has gone on record to admit the country may have suffered up to 6,000 casualties. Ukraine claims it is over 55,000. The truth lies somewhere in between, though most certainly closer to Kyiv than Moscow's estimation. And this doesn't take into account the hundreds of desertions from the Russian army to date. Back in Moscow, there was even public criticism from former parliamentarian Boris Nadyrstadin. "It's either full-scale war or we get out," he said on a heated panel discussion on state TV. Nadyrstadin is an approved opposition figure, so it was to be expected. Nonetheless, he voiced what many are thinking: the war is not going to plan, despite Kremlin claims of its retreat in Kharkiv as a tactical move. The Ukrainians are, naturally, loving all of this. The Defence of Ukraine tweeted on Tuesday, the 20th of September, "Why did the chicken cross the road? Because it was regrouping." Putin is not the only one with a sense of humour. This mobilisation means the war is coming ever closer to ordinary Russians. Petya is a Ukrainian soldier on the country's southern front. He's weighing up what recent events mean for those on the front lines, and he recognised that he needed more troops, more people to reach his goals. Before this moment, for ordinary people in Russia, this war was something very far away. But now, ordinary Russian people will feel what this war means in their personal life. This is important, even in a dictatorship, which Russia emphatically is, no matter how many democratic veneers Putin tries to paste over his actions. You can't enrage too many people too many times if you want to govern more or less unhindered. When I was last in Ukraine, over the summer, I lost count of how many people told me the USSR's failed invasion of Afghanistan was the final nail in its coffin. At first glance, Russians are unhappy. The most searched terms on the internet in Russia, following the announcement, were, according to one anonymous tweeter, "how to break your arm," "how to leave Russia," "foreign passport," and then "how to avoid mobilisation." There's a great joke doing the rounds in Moscow right now, too. "As a reservist, you have been mobilised. Who are we fighting with?" "The Nazis." "Yes, but against whom?" Discontent is being expressed in various ways. One-way airline tickets are soaring in price and selling out fast. Meanwhile, small-scale protests are making themselves heard in towns across the country, and over 1,000 Russians have now been arrested so far at protests. In a country where you can get 15 years in prison for speaking out, these are the acts of either extremely brave or extremely fed-up people. Both are a grave danger for despotic regimes. Then again, Russians are often unhappy. As a Russian friend once said to me, "Yeah, politics sucks, but it's like the weather. You can't do anything about it." Any sense that Putin is in imminent political or indeed personal danger must be dismissed as almost certainly false, with the caveat that in life, and especially in Russia, anything can happen. Petya understands the truth of all this. And the future of this war depends not only on the force of the Russian army against the Ukrainian army, but also on the views and position of the Russian people. And he is hopeful, as are most military-minded Ukrainians I speak to. "Ignore the noise," or as one so memorably put it, "politician bull poo-poo," and look at what is happening on the ground. Ukraine continues to advance in the north, having taken over 8,000 square kilometres to date, and soon hopes to encircle the city of Kherson in the occupied south, something that might be a touch too hopeful. And Kyiv is not letting up. Zelensky is now focused on speed in liberated areas. Ukrainian forces just captured Bylohorivka, a small village in Luhansk, which is small but symbolic, as it's 10 kilometres west of the city of Lychansk, which fell to the Russians in July. This causes Russia more problems. In each new territory that Ukraine seizes back, more evidence of Russian atrocities emerges. More mass graves, more scenes of torture, more tales of the brutality of occupation from those who endured it. Putin's response is simple. People in the Zaporizhia and Kherson regions, in Lugansk and Donetsk, saw and are seeing now the atrocities perpetrated by the neo-Nazis in Ukrainian-occupied areas of the Kharkiv region, he said. It's a simple rhetorical device, beloved of despots everywhere. Just deny the reality of everything, and keep denying it. Blame the victims. You know most won't swallow the nonsense, but the constituency you need to will. It doesn't matter that people can see the truth. It doesn't matter that they can read it in the press and hear it on the TV and radio. This is the essence of totalitarianism. The leader controls not just your civil rights and your freedoms, but your very senses. What you heard, you did not hear. What you saw, you did not see. This is Putinism in action. But once you take the steps toward outright despotism that Putin has, there is no going back. There can be no failure either, as failure can only lead to downfall or death, usually both. Partial mobilization by Russia means only one thing, continues Petya. The defeat of the so-called special military operation declared by Vladimir Putin. And practically, it means that Putin has recognized defeat. But if Putin has recognized defeat of what he thought would be a limited eastern mission, he cannot accept defeat of the wider invasion of Ukraine. In his speech, he said, Russia will use all the means at our disposal to protect Russia and our people. It's not a bluff. He was, indubitably, talking about nuclear weapons, his ultimate trump card. If it's a sign of weakness, and it is, it's also a sign of how far nuclear taboos have been eroded. Throughout the whole of the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis, neither John F. Kennedy nor Nikita Khrushchev once mentioned the possibility of nuclear strikes. The Kremlin now alludes to it on a daily basis. The Russian establishment remains mostly united and on message. Recently, Andrei Guliarov, State Duma deputy, expressed a desire to end Ukraine's existence. Russia's largest defense company, Rostec, has drastically increased its arms production after bringing in an overtime schedule. On the ground, though, Petya is equally determined. Nothing has changed, because we still continue to defend our country, he says. We see our task as still the same as it was before, the mobilization. Our goal is to liberate occupied territories of Ukraine and achieve victory over Russia. Every soldier understands this goal, and the military spirit, morale, is still very high. But to do this, as Petya knows, Ukraine will keep needing Western weapons and support. Key to the Kremlin's strategy is the belief that we will eventually give up and abandon Ukraine. And you can see why. Putin looked at Iraq, the failure of Barack Obama to keep to his red line after chemical weapon use in Syria, and most recently the flight from Afghanistan. And he concluded the West was exhausted and spent. So far, we have proved him wrong. The EU Council just adopted a new 5 billion euro assistance package. When I met Foreign Office officials recently, the message was simple. Full steam ahead with supporting Ukraine. Britain has a new Prime Minister, fully aligned with her predecessor. She has made this abundantly clear. Petya is keen to emphasise the importance of this continuing support. To reach victory, we need more help from the side of our Western partners, he says. We need new armaments. We need new technologies. We see that Russia's entire policy is its human potential, but not technology. Winning by quantity, not quality. That's all they can do. Now, across the occupied territories, the referendums are beginning. Putin is going to annex large parts of southern Ukraine to Russia. But as much as he tells himself, and Russians otherwise, this will only make Ukrainians yet again more determined to resist. On the morning on the 22nd of September, I received a message from a Ukrainian friend. News from Kherson are bad. Russians with rifles and uniforms coming in villages from house to house, and press people to vote, often threaten if they don't want to. The war is far from over. The violence will continue. Ukrainians will continue to die. We must make sure that alongside all this horror, our support continues too, both for Ukraine and for the international order we have so painstakingly built over the 7 decades since the last time a tyrant unleashed industrial war on the European continent. You are listening to Unheard, where David Patrikarakos writes, "Will Putin's gamble pay off?" This article was published on the 23rd of September 2022 and was read by Martin Buchanan for NOAA.